Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. We are happy to have you on board today. We're going to dive right into it. We had a lot to get into yesterday. Didn't even touch a lick of it. We had to go to history class yesterday, though. Yesterday's history class was very important. I think anytime we can talk about the history that took place in 1913, I think that's a good thing. I think we should probably have more history classes centered and focused on the events of 1913. Those two amendments, the 16th, the 17th Amendment, those two, they went so far in destroying the constitutional fabric of this republic. It's mind-blowing that they were able to pull it off. In addition to the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all spearheaded, I shouldn't say spearheaded by, I don't know that Woodrow Wilson was the tip of the spear. There were other men at work in terms of being the tips of those spears, but Woodrow Wilson was certainly in support of it. He certainly signed off on all of it, loved it, and then his inaugural speech of just, you know, he didn't say these words, hey, we're going to be socialists, but that was the theme. That was the theme of the speech. All right, I don't need to rehash that history class. It was just a good one. If you missed it, go find it in podcast. Do it. Go find it in podcast and share it. Now, I was at an event Sunday night at a local church here in Michigan. The pastor had a potential, or I shouldn't say a potential, a candidate running for the state house here in Michigan. He came in and he spoke, and he had very good things to say. In terms of updating events here in Michigan. And there was some Q&A afterwards, and someone stood up and he said, hey, how do we, you know, you're saying things and you're telling us things that we're not aware of. How can we find these? How can we find this information? What sources should we be reading and listening to? And it was in that moment that, well, I actually stood up to answer the man's question, but the microphone didn't make its way back to me. But it was in that moment that I was going to suggest, sir, go to AmericaOutLoud.news. That has got to be one of your stops. Now, I say this all the time, America Out Loud, it's where smart people go to get their news and information. And it's true, it is, but it's not just a saying. It's not just a cliche. There is important information here. And I think we need to be sharing it. That's my point. If you hear something that you like on the network, share it. Let people know about it, because this information has got to reach as many people as possible. It's got to reach as many people as possible. AmericaOutLoud.news. I say that just to say, you know, I'm not suggesting that you share yesterday's program just because it's me and I want my name out there, and you should, I mean, that's not my point. My point is the information on the events of 1913, the 16th and 17th Amendment, and how they unraveled the constitutional fabric of our republic is something that people should know. Well, what, you know, what can they do about it? People can't, what's done is done. Doesn't matter. Having the information, enlightening people, letting them see really, truly what took place that has to be the effort. We have to make people aware. We have to let people know. People have to know what's going on currently. And it gives us a better perspective if we know what went on in history, if we know who was behind it, and if we see what the end results were. And obviously, I shouldn't say end results because we haven't hit the end. But when we can see the results of a certain thing, then we can kind of put the pieces together. We can put the pieces of the puzzle together and then we can figure out, okay, all right, what's really going on here? And what has been going on here for decades? Yay, centuries, maybe, perhaps. All right, so share yesterday's program. We covered a lot. We had a fantastic history class and we covered a lot. But there is a pile of things here that I'd like to get into. And for the most part, they're DEI related. Really, they are. Things going on at the University of Texas, things going on at Harvard, things going on at Wisconsin. Let's start out with Texas first. This headline says University of Texas at Austin closes DEI office after a warning letter to comply with law. Here we go. There's laws out there, fellas, and you better, here comes your warning letter. You better comply with these laws. And these laws are out there to save the country, which DEI is not out there to save the country. DEI is out there to destroy the country. The University of Texas at Austin has laid off employees who worked in the school's diversity, equity, and inclusion program. UT Austin's president, Jay Hartzell, announced Tuesday that some staff members' positions were eliminated following an evaluation of the university's programs affected by Senate Bill 17, which bans DEI offices, policies, programs, and activities at state-funded institutions of higher learning. All right. So here we are. We're in March. I want to know when this SB 17 took effect. January 1st. According to the letter, the university had been focused on ensuring it was compliant with the new state law, which took effect on January 1st. All right. So here we are, January 1st. And it's now April. Okay. Today is April the 9th. Now, this article came out last week. So, does it take a university 3 months to determine if they are in compliance with a law? I mean, can't you look at your records and figure it out? I don't know, in a couple of days, right? Maybe a week. Okay. Maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks tops. And that's being extremely generous. I don't think it takes you 3 months. You know, my question is, was the University of Texas at Austin just gonna not do anything and just hope that nothing would come of it? Was that the point? Here's what Mr. Hartzell had to say about it in a campus-wide message to students and staff. The positions that provided support for those associate and assistant deans and a small number of staff roles across campus that were formerly focused on DEI will no longer be funded. Since that date, he's referring here to January 1st, I think. Since that date, we have been evaluating our post SB 17 portfolio. That would be the bill, Senate Bill 17. So apparently they have a portfolio. Okay. They had to make sure in this portfolio that everything aligned, huh? Our portfolio of divisions, programs, and positions. The new law has changed the scope of some programs on campus, making them broader and creating duplication with long-standing existing programs supporting students, faculty, and staff. So apparently he is saying that it took us a long time to figure that. It took us 3 months because, I mean, that's so entrenched. It's so detailed. Yeah, we're buying it. Public colleges and universities must follow state and federal anti-discrimination laws. The school determined it would be necessary to close the Division of Campus and Community Engagement, the DCC office, and end its programs and activities associated with DEI. Mr. Hartzell continues in his memo that says, this means we will continue to operate many programs with rich histories spanning decades, such as Disability Services, University Interscholastic League, the UT Charter Schools, and Volunteer and Community Programs. However, some of the DEI staff members returned to their previous faculty positions, and those who lost their jobs are eligible to apply for other positions. So really, has DEI gone away? That's my question. Now, while the university is no longer able to fund it and support it, has it truly gone away? All right, I don't know. I'm not going to get into those weeds. I just think that this is good news coming out of Texas. The layoffs come a week after State Senator Brandon Creighton, who authored SB 17, sent a letter to university system chancellors and regents at universities across the state, calling on them to prove they are in compliance. Otherwise, I don't think these guys would have even done anything about it. It's a law. Okay. I mean, we're just going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to make them come to us. Mr. Creighton, chair of the State Senate Committee on Education, warned the universities that their funding could be blocked and they could face legal action if they fail to comply. Here's what he said. While I am encouraged with the progress I've seen from many institutions of higher education in implementing SB 17, I am deeply concerned with the possibility that many institutions may choose to merely rename their offices or employee titles. Those dirty little sneaks. They're going to keep doing what they're doing. They're just going to put it under a different name. This letter should serve as notice that this practice is unacceptable, and also a reminder that SB 17 encompasses stringent enforcement provisions, including the potential freezing of university funding and legal ramifications of non-compliance. Once you hit them in the pocketbook, it's over. You win because they want their money. Every single one of these universities within the state system, they all want their money. That might be why they're in existence, because they get the money. Oh, come on, Dean. They're universities. They want to educate kids. Do they? Do they? That would be my question back to you. The Senate Education Committee will hold an oversight hearing in May to ensure the schools have taken the necessary steps to stop all DEI programs, activities, training, and hiring practices. In his letter, Mr. Creighton asked the universities to have a representative available to testify at the hearing and to submit in writing answers to 5 questions regarding their university system's compliance no later than May 3rd. So let's put them under oath and let's ask them about their compliance. These questions. These are fantastic. Okay, they're not messing around in Texas. Don't mess with Texas. Number one, how has your institution ensured there are no DEI offices or officers on campus or no individual or organizations performing the duties of a DEI office or officer? All right, so this is good because, I said to you originally earlier, just a couple minutes ago, these folks that are the DEI offices have been shut down, but these people that ran the offices, they've gone back to their former positions, whatever those might have been. And I pose this question, has DEI died at this university then? If these people are still around, aren't they going to continue to do what they were doing just under a different name? Well, this question here kind of gets to that. How is your institution ensured no individual or organizations performing the duties of a DEI officer? Okay, you've shut down, but how can you show us that these individuals are still not acting as a DEI officer? Okay, that's a good question. Number two, how has your institution worked to ensure that DEI training is not required for students, staff, and faculty? That's good. Number three, how has your institution acted to comply with the provision which prohibits providing preference on the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin to an applicant for employment? Because that's what DEI is, kids. That's what it is. You know it. You know it is. If you've been a part of this show long enough, you know that DEI is basically providing preferential treatment. Preferential preference. Is that just pretty much the same thing? On the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity. That's all it is. That's all we're doing here. All right, number four. How has your institution worked to ensure diversity statements cannot be considered for hiring or promotion? And number five, SB 17 requires regular audits by the state auditor's office. How has your institution been preparing for this oversight action? Get ready, kids, because it's coming. Here comes the audit. Oh, get ready. We're going to audit. We're going to make sure that you are not indoctrinating students, staff, various members of the university community on how to be a racist. 101. How to be a racist. 101. Mr. Crichton reminded the university regents that enforcement falls as much upon your shoulders as it does this committee. Oh, yeah. A banner at the top of UT Austin's DCCE webpage notifies visitors that the office is closing. So here we go. Texas is following suit because Florida did it, Bama did it, Indiana has also done it. There are things afoot happening at the university level. And here we go. Listen to Harvard. Okay, here's what's going on in Harvard. You know what? I'm up against it. All right, let's pause here. We will pick up Harvard because you know we love Harvard around here. You know, when there's something happening at Harvard, we need to talk about it. We would be amiss to not if we didn't talk about it. With Harvard being the oldest institution in the country, we have to shine the light of truth on this once glorious campus. I say once, perhaps it can come back again. Perhaps the glory days of Harvard can be revisited. The only way that's going to happen, though, is if we talk about what's happening. All right, so we will pick up Harvard on the other side of this break. We're listening to the Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Today's high-stress, on-the-go lifestyle makes it hard to stay heart healthy. Lifestyle changes like exercise and diet are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support three aspects of heart health: cholesterol, blood pressure, and triglycerides, with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 13 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Welcome back to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. Thank you for being on board. You can find us here Monday through Friday at the 2 p.m. Eastern time slot. No matter how you're listening, we are happy that you are. Thank you for joining us. You know, I've got to say, Austin, Texas might be one of the Democrat progressive meccas in the country. They cannot be happy over here at the University of Texas at Austin when they are being forced to close their DEI offices. They just can't be happy about it. Another mecca, unfortunately, for many of us, unfortunately for the country, another mecca has found itself at Harvard. However, I am holding a very interesting article. And this article here makes my point that while the progressive left is pushing these racist practices and policies down the educational throat of the country, these policies aren't necessarily supported by the entire left, by the rank and file people that are good people. They've voted Democrat all their lives because they felt like the Democrat Party gave them the best opportunity for whatever. I don't know what that whatever is, because I don't think the Democrat Party has ever given any voter the best opportunity for anything unless you want to be a racist. But I'm not saying that if you vote Democrat, you're a racist. That's not my point. My point is you've been duped. You have had the wool pulled over your eyes for decades. But there are good people that vote Democrat and their eyes are opening. Their eyes are opening up to this. Listen to this. This article is entitled, Harvard Professor Calls to Abolish Mandatory DEI Pledge. A Harvard Law School professor has spoken out against forcing those seeking university faculty posts to submit a statement about their commitment to the cause of diversity, equity, and inclusion. A practice, the professor says, creates a toxic culture of insincerity. It also, sir, I would add to your statement, it creates a toxic culture of racism, of hatred, of bigotry, of anti-American, anti-Christian sentiments. Professor Randall Kennedy wrote just a couple of days ago in an op-ed for the Council on Academic Freedom at Harvard. He said candidates for academic positions at Harvard should not be asked to support ideological comments, right? That's what it, ideological commitments. I am a scholar on the left, he said, committed to struggles for social justice. The realities surrounding mandatory DEI statements, however, make me wince. He's a scholar on the left, and he's committed to social justice, by the way. But this, what's happening here on university campuses, it makes this man wince. And you know what a wince looks like? It's like, oh, really? Are we doing that? Are we going to say that? Are we going to... Really? I mean, that to me, that's what a wince is. And you just kind of, squint your eyes, you grit your teeth, you kind of, turn your head a certain way. These so-called, it's a strong verb, by the way. You can tell the man's an educator because he knows how to use a strong verb. It just creates a picture in your mind. Love it. These so-called diversity statements, according to the professor, on the surface are meant to facilitate a more open and welcoming environment for everyone. That's what they tell us. We want to be more open. We want to welcome everybody into this big tent. But in fact, they act no more than ideological litmus tests, especially for job applicants who know that they won't be hired if they show opposition or even not enough enthusiasm for the leftist agenda. Oh, so if you want to get into Harvard, you got to play the part. You got to make them believe either legitimately that you're a racist or that, you have to act it out pretty well. Mr. Kennedy continues, it does not take much discernment to see, moreover, that the diversity statement regime leans heavily towards varieties of academic leftism and implicitly discourages candidates who harbor ideologically conservative dispositions. And this man has admitted he's on the left. But yet, he's of the opinion that why would we just want to hire everybody who's on the left? There's no opposing point of view at that point. He continues, in addition to exerting pressure towards leftist conformity, the process of eliciting diversity statements abets cynicism. He continued by noting that the prevalent DEI statement requirement has already bred a whole industry to provide job applicants with prefabricated boilerplate rhetoric. You say the thing and you'll get in. It's prefab. It's boilerplate. It's already etched in stone. You know what you got to say. And then you say this and you're hired. Because you're letting the powers that be know, you're on board. You're on board this ship. To showcase how prevalent the DEI ideology is in the Ivy League school's hiring process, Mr. Kennedy pointed to an application from Harvard's Derek Bok Center for Teaching and Learning. All right, are you ready for this? It's about to get interesting. He says, quote, here are two questions that he's pointing out. How does your research engage with and advance the well-being of socially marginalized communities? Can you show us the research and how you have advanced the well-being of those communities which are socially marginalized? That's code for how has your research advanced racism? That's what that is. That's code for that. Now, hang on. There's another question. Do you know how the following operate in the academy? Implicit bias, different forms of privileges, settler colonialism, systemic and interpersonal racism, homophobia, heteropatriarchy, and obliism. What the? Okay, first of all, do you know how these operate in the academy? Do you know how implicit bias operates? Do you know how settler colonialism? Do you know how systemic and interpersonal racism? Interpersonal racism. Do you know how that operates? Do you know how we treat interpersonal racism? What in the world is is that where you're racist against yourself? I don't know. Is that where you're racist, but you don't tell anybody because you just keep it to yourself? It's interpersonal. Oh. DEI statements, he continues. DEI statements will essentially constitute pledges of allegiance that enlist academics into the DEI movement by dint or soft-spoken but real coercion. This is real here. It's real coercion. You're being coerced. It's going to kind of be soft-spoken. It's going to kind of be directed and guided, but it's coercion. If you want the job or the promotion, play ball or else. If you want to be hired here at Harvard, if you want to climb the ladder here at Harvard, you better speak the speak. You better walk the walk and talk the talk. You better play this game. You better show us that you're a racist through and through. You better prove to us that you hate white people. And if you're a white person, you better come in every day punching yourself in the throat, cursing under your breath, loud enough for everyone to hear, though, but cursing under your breath that you wish to God you weren't a white man, or that you weren't straight, or that you weren't a Christian. I mean, do you see it? Am I missing it here? The law professor went on to argue that DEI pledges pose a profound challenge to academic freedom and must be abolished. The practice of demanding them ought to be abandoned both at Harvard and beyond, he wrote. And he's spot on. He's absolutely 100% correct. Because It's because they're racist. The practices are racist. Now, this is a man, my friends, on the left. And he's writing about this. And this is really what I want to point out. He's saying, look, enough is enough. We can't keep doing this. He refers to himself as a scholar on the left, but he says the practice of demanding these DEI statements ought to be abandoned, not only at Harvard, but everywhere, because they constitute a pledge of allegiance. That's all they do. They create robots. They create people. They create a way of thinking in people that must be in alignment with what the big brother at the top of Harvard says you've got to be in alignment with. There's no free thinking here. There's no free thought. There's no open-mindedness. It's all, you have to follow these progressive ideologies of racism or else. Now, this is somebody on the left, and his eyes are open, and he's seeing the truth here. Again, and this, my friends, is why I say we're winning. Because this is not left versus right here, at least not in the main stream of everyday activity, just everyday humans going to work. This is not us versus them or them versus us. This is the progressive left at the very top of the Democrat Party versus everybody else, versus all of America, versus people in their own party. This professor here, I bet, what's his name? Randall Kennedy. I mean, do you think he's going to be blackballed here at Harvard? You think his job is going to last very long at Harvard? It'll be interesting to follow to see what happens. I mean, probably, I mean, he might be spared just because he's gone public with it. And, you know, it's now on people's radar. He might be spared publicly, but internally, do you think it's going to go well for this man? A man on the left, one of them. They will turn on him in a heartbeat. But his eyes are open. And this is the point that I've been making for weeks here now, maybe even months, that the eyes of America, that they're opening. You've got, and we've talked about it in the sense of parents and the fact that the public school system is losing enrollment every single day because parents realize, I don't want my child being indoctrinated in this any longer. I don't want it. We're not going to do it. We're not going to play this game. And now we have this professor on the left here at Harvard, mind you, who is saying the exact same thing. This has got to stop. The eyes of people are opening. I have an interesting clip here I'm going to play for you. This is Tucker, and he is making my point here. He's making my point that the eyes of the country are opening, and it's a very good thing. Let's take a listen.
The news is so grim at this point that you almost don't want to turn on your phone in the morning. It's just peace after unremitting peace, suggesting that Western civilization is crumbling and collapsing all around us, followed by typically a summary piece confirming that, in fact, it is collapsing all around us. So it is against that grim landscape that we read a piece the other day that was just the opposite. It was hopeful and smart and beautifully expressed. It was written by a man called Santiago Pliego, and it's written on a Substack, and the piece is called The Vibe Shift. And the thesis essentially is that people are starting to notice that things are amiss. And the main thing that's amiss is the gap between the reality that they observe and the version of reality presented them by the government, the media, the experts. And this is good. It is long overdue that people are starting to see glimpses of reality.
Yes, this is very good. It is very good. People are seeing, in Tucker's words, glimpses of reality. They're understanding what's going on. I like that the name of this guy's piece, the vibe shift. There's a shift in the vibe. And it's been happening for a while. It's been quiet, but it's not going to continue to stay quiet. It's been quiet probably because, well, people are naturally afraid. They don't want to speak out. They don't want to ruffle the feathers. They don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to, they don't want authorities or verbiage or language being directed at them or being piled on towards them. So it's been quiet, but it's not going to stay quiet. We've got this professor here at Harvard who is, saying that this mandatory DEI pledge, this ideological litmus test, it has to be abolished. It's got to be removed. We can't keep doing this. And the eyes of just everyday Americans are starting to open up, and we're starting to realize, okay, what we're being told is not the way things are actually working out. What we're being, he says somewhere in this article that, he says, it doesn't take much discernment to see that the diversity statement regime leans heavily towards varieties of academic leftism. These so-called diversity statements are nothing more than an open, or no, here it is. The so-called diversity statements on the surface are meant to facilitate a more open and welcoming environment for everyone. And that's what they say. That's what we're being told. We're being told that we have to have DEI programs at colleges and universities and K-12 schools because they facilitate a more open and welcoming environment for everyone. But that's not the reality. That's not the truth of what's being accomplished. The professor here at Harvard says, but in fact, these act no more than ideological litmus tests for job applicants who know that they won't be hired if they show opposition to it. And then he says, it doesn't take much to look and see the academic leftism and the pressure towards leftist conformity. That's all this is. It's leftist conformity. There's nothing open here. There's nothing welcoming. It creates racism. And they know that's what it creates. They know, in their own opinion, and I've repeated this time after time after time, after I heard Burgess Owens, the chair of the educational subcommittee, in testimony about DEI, where he said, he quoted the guy, I don't have the guy's name in front of me, but he quoted the DEI fellow who said, look, we believe the only remedy for past racism is present racism. And the only remedy for present racism is future racism. We have to be racist towards those who were racist towards us. That's it. We have to deliver wrong with more wrong. And this is the point, but this is not what they say. And Tucker's taking note here, and he's noticing this guy who's written this on Substack, the vibe shift, that there's a shift in the vibe. People are realizing the truth. And to me, this is encouraging. And I've been saying this for weeks now. And you've heard me say it for weeks now. The eyes of Americans are opening up. The vibe is shifting. And that is very encouraging. It's encouraging to see. It's great to see. And I think we're going to keep seeing it. Why? Because Americans love America. And Americans love what America stands for. And therefore, we will keep seeing it. All right, we're going to pick up one more article. I'm getting through this pretty good today, kids. Wow, I am, woohoo, I'm clipping along nicely. Let's pause here for this break, and we'll go to Wisconsin. We'll pay a visit to Wisconsin on the other side. You're listening to The Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Expert opinions, honest debate, and in-depth investigations are what you've come to expect from AmericaOutloud.news. We don't shy away from speaking the truth boldly and plainly. All that's missing is the propaganda that has infected legacy and social media. Get the best of down and dirty, wholesome American speak. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. So, my friends, the tide is turning. There is a shift taking place. We've been talking about this shift. We've been talking about it for a while, and we're going to keep talking about it. We're going to keep highlighting it. Wisconsin. Let's go to Wisconsin. The headline says, Wisconsin professor suspended for criticizing DEI initiative reaches settlement agreement. All right, so there's a settlement agreement after his suspension. He is a professor not at the University of Wisconsin, but at the Lutheran Church-affiliated Concordia University, Wisconsin. Now, Concordia, they've got a campus here in the Ann Arbor area. Matter of fact, one of our students that graduated from Waterbrook went to Concordia a couple years ago. She went to play softball. So they're everywhere, but they are affiliated with the Lutheran Church. And a professor there has reached a settlement agreement after he was suspended for criticizing the university's shift toward DEI. The Reverend Gregory Schultz, he is a professor of philosophy. In February 2022, he published an essay titled Woke Dysphoria at Concordia. I wonder if he meant to rhyme. And that did not make Concordia University happy. What in the world are you doing letting people know that we're woke? I mean, this headline is, this, the title of your essay is genius. Woke Dysphoria at Concordia. You can't be that genius and blow the cover off of our secretive plots and plans. How dare you? You're suspended. In the essay, which was published in Christian News, Reverend Schultz wrote that the university is experiencing dysphoria or unease because it has been influenced by wokeism, which he defined as a potent cocktail of progressivism, neo-pragmatism, and Marxism. There's just a lot of isms here. It gets to the point where I'm just... whatever. Come on, it's too much. Can't we just call them what they are, Marxists? This unease, he says, was aggravated by the university's search for a new president, who the board desired to be disruptive and transformational, and demonstrated belief in and commitment to equity and inclusion. All right, so this is my point. It's happening, my friends, at the board level. That was the point at Harvard. They got rid of Claudine Gay. Nothing's going to change. It's happening at the board level. This board here, this board of whatever, overseeing Concordia, a Lutheran university, wanted somebody who was going to fall in line with DEI. Reverend Schultz continues, these are aggressive, progressive, woke mantras. Diversity refers to racialized diversity with unsubstantiated assumptions of white privilege and systemic racism that form the mythological basis of Harvard's critical race theory in the 1619 Project. Inclusion, he continues, inclusion is an aggressive, almost violent version of what used to be known as affirmative action, now construed as racial reparations, again, on the basis of the mythological thinking from critical race theory. Equity, he continues, is the enforcement of diversity and inclusion by any means necessary, excepting by means of thoughtful, reasonable, and honest writing and discussion. Reverend Schultz nails it. He crushes this fastball out of the park, over the fence. I should say it this way, over the fence and out of the park, ripping the cover off the ball. He beautifully describes the way they define diversity, equity, and inclusion. Not the way the words are actually defined in the dictionary. The way they define them in reality. And this is my point. This is the point Tucker was making in the clip. The eyes of Americans are opening. We're seeing the truth of it. He continues, Reverend Schultz continues. The woke agenda rejects authoritative texts, such as the U.S. Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bible. Probably, not necessarily in this order, the three most important texts in the history of America. American history, the Bible, the Declaration, and the Constitution are the big three. In that order, I would say, because that's the order that they arrive in chronologically. He continues, though, this letter is so good. Reverend Schultz says, when our Board of Regents committees announced their intentions to install a president who exhibits, quote, a demonstrated belief in and commitment to equity and inclusion and promotes racialized diversity in all its myriad forms, they are announcing their plan to disrupt the authority of the biblical text and in this way to transform our university from an institution of Lutheran higher education to who knows what. He nails it. He is 1,000% correct. And this is the point. This is the point of people that are in charge. The point is to transform. It's to transform the country into something that it isn't. It's not a racist country, but that's what they want it to be. He goes on, Reverend Schultz wrote, there could be no systemic racism at the university because of its commitment to Christ incarnate and his universal justification of all human beings without exception. This is a Lutheran university. And if they do believe that and have a commitment to Christ incarnate and his universal justification of all human beings without exception, how can there be racism? The point is that Christ died for all. And this is a religious university. Don't they have to believe that? Isn't that their point of existence? However, Schultz notes, there is a problem with systemic wokeism that has polluted many aspects of university policy, including accreditation. Instead of committing to woke ideologies, Reverend Schultz wrote that the next president must be a pastor committed to biblical scripture following Lutheran teaching. This is the whole point, that if we're a Christian nation and we truly believe that Christ died for everybody, then racism cannot exist.
Well, Dean, if this was a Christian nation, why was slavery a thing?
Yeah. I'm going to answer that question. Slavery was a thing because the people that were pushing it, I'm going to say it, they truly weren't Christian. Oh, I'm sure they went to church on Sunday. I'm sure they read their Bible. Matter of fact, if you read anything that Frederick Douglass has written, that he would tell you that the worst of the slaveholders, matter of fact, I'm gonna paraphrase from his book, the worst of the slaveholders were the ones that went to church every Sunday and professed this piety, but they were despicable human beings. That's not Christian. Now, you can say that you're Christian all day long. You're not Christian. Not going to happen. There was slavery in this country. And I'm here to tell you, it was not promoted by true Christianity, because slavery is an anti-Christian idea. Christ died for all. Today, my friends, let's just take this moment and go to a history class quickly. I'm going to do it quickly because I'm running out of time. Today's April 9th. The Civil War came to an end for all practical purposes. On today, April 9th, when Robert E. Lee met with Ulysses S. Grant in a farmhouse at the Appomattox Courthouse to offer his surrender. Grant's terms were generous. The Southern soldiers were to be pardoned and could go home with their private property, including their horses, which could be used for a large spring planting. Officers could keep their sidearms, and Lee's hungry troops would receive Union rations. "This offer will have the best possible effect on the men," Lee quietly stated. It ended. In the American Patriots Almanac, here's what Bill Bennett has to say. It was over. The Union had been tested and had survived. With a salute of soldiery respect, the nation's wounds began to heal. So he talks about this story here where he says, 3 days later, the formal surrender took place as Confederate troops marched forward to stack their weapons and lay down their flags. The Union officer in charge of the ceremony was Joshua Chamberlain, a hero of Gettysburg. Leading the Southerners, The Southerners was General John B. Gordon, who had been wounded many times in combat. Chamberlain watched Gordon approaching, as he later described it. Quote, "The general was riding in advance of his troops, his chin dropped to his breast, downhearted and dejected in appearance, almost beyond description." At this point, something stirred in Chamberlain. He gave an order. This is the Northern commander. He gave an order. A bugle call sounded, and his men came to attention with their rifles on their shoulders. It was a salute of honor. This Northern commander is giving the Southern general and his troops a salute of honor. General Gordon looked up in surprise. Recognizing the gesture, he wheeled his horse, dipped his sword, and ordered his own men to return the salute. Lee's defeated veterans stepped forward with heads high and eyes level. Honor saluting honor. And then Bennett says, then it was over. The Union had been tested and had survived. With a salute of soldierly respect, the nation's wounds began to heal. Both sides faced a new beginning as Americans all. But that didn't mean racism was destroyed. There were still people who were racist. Matter of fact, it was also on this date, right here, April 9th, same day, but several years later, 1939, when black singer Marian Anderson was not allowed to perform her concert at Constitution Hall. I mean, this story is amazing. You know, here we are all these years later. Marian Anderson is invited to perform at Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. And it says that members of the Daughters of the American Revolution, a women's group of descendants of Revolutionary War participants, owned the hall. They owned Constitution Hall. And they refused to rent the facility because Marian Anderson was Black. They refused to open it up to her. Okay, the Civil War is done all these years, but yet racism still exists. But there are more people in the country who are not racist who will continue to fight tooth and nail to kill this evil. First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt resigned her membership in the Daughters of the American Revolution. And then she personally arranged for Marian Anderson to sing at the Lincoln Memorial instead. An audience, get this, an audience of 75,000 people showed up today, or showed up on that day. Millions more listened on the radio. When it was announced that Marian Anderson would not be allowed, the editors of America weighed in. Oh, I am running out of time. I'm not going to be able to read this, but it is so beautiful. I've only got 2 minutes. But to read what these people said in support of Marian Anderson, I'll post this article in my show notes. The point is that the Civil War was over on April 9th. And then here we are decades later on April 9th, and you've got the Daughters of the American Revolution, a legitimate organization, not renting Constitution Hall to Marian Anderson because she's a Black woman, because there was racism involved there. But that's not the point of the story. That would be the point of the story if it's being taught in public education today. See, racism even existed after the Civil War. That's not the point of the story, though. The point of the story is Eleanor Roosevelt said no. She resigned her membership in the Daughters of the American Revolution. And she invited Marian Anderson to come sing at the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, and 75,000 people showed up. 75,000. You weren't going to pack 75,000 people in Constitution Hall, but they showed up at the Washington Mall, and millions more tuned in to listen on radio because the country, the majority of the country, we believe in the Christian principles, which are anti-racism. We're not racists, and we do not want racism to continue. And this is my point, friends. The eyes of Americans are opening. We're tired of it, but we're going to push forward. And I love it. I love being awake. All right, that is all the time we have for today, America. Thank you for joining me. Encourage your friends and family to get on the Dean's List. Let's unite to renovate the age.